It was the hottest time of day. Got to use our imaginations a little bit. Today's not exactly a day to be imagining a very hot day, but it was the hottest time of day. It's noon. The sun is directly overhead. Most people are inside the shade of their homes, underneath trees, sipping the water they collected much earlier in the day so that they didn't have to be out at noon at the well. But what woman comes to the well at noon, at a time that it's not really recommended to come to the well? She comes to get her water when she needs it, instead of kind of anticipating that need. She comes to get her water when it's hottest, instead of enjoying the water when it's hottest, having collected it earlier. She comes to the well, which is usually a gathering place and a social place, when she imagines that no one else is going to be there. We don't know why that is, but we could take some guesses. And one pretty good guess is that maybe she doesn't want to see a lot of people. We don't know why she's had 5 husbands and is now with a 6th person, presumably, who's not her husband. We don't know why that is. It could have been, she could be a multiple widow, a multiple divorcee. We don't know, some combination. But in any case, in the first century, whatever happened, it's her fault. It's always her fault. And so she's unlucky, at the very least, and wanton and treacherous is probably more likely the reputation she's earned. And so she's probably, maybe, coming to this well at noon when no one else is there to avoid the sneers that she would get otherwise, or the whispering behind her back that the other women would do as they gathered water as well. So she comes avoiding people so that she can draw her water in peace. And I imagine that she comes at the hottest time of the day, feeling pretty hot, feeling pretty tired, feeling stagnant, like the water at the bottom of the well, just sitting there. I imagine that she comes to the well at the hottest time of day, feeling like an outcast, feeling trapped in old ways of thinking, feeling trapped by her reputation and what other people say about her and the expectations that are placed on her by herself and by others, feeling locked into her past and burdened by it. I imagine that she comes to the well thirsty and completely wrung out. The pitcher she carries with her is not the only thing bone dry and empty. So she comes to the well by herself, hoping to be alone, and there's already a man sitting there. Not any man, there's a Jew. Now, Samaritans and Jews do not get along. Samaritans and Jews are sort of like long-lost cousins of one another, religiously speaking. And the Samaritan people were kind of left behind after one of the many times that Israel was conquered. They were kind of left behind, and they branched out their own sort of understanding of the faith, and they intermarried with some of the other peoples in the area and became kind of a separate sect, if you will. But they're not like far enough removed from Judaism to be completely ignored. You know, they're still part of the family, and so as such, there's a really bitter rivalry between Jews and Samaritans. Now, a Jewish man is not really supposed to speak with any woman. That's why the disciples are astonished that Jesus is talking with a woman at all. We know he does that all the time, though. But a Jewish man is not supposed to speak to any woman except his mother and his wife. I assume his sisters might be okay, too. But other than that, if she's not related to him, he's not supposed to engage in a conversation with a woman. But not just any woman. This is a Samaritan woman. Anything a Samaritan touches is unclean. Her water pitcher, herself, the well he's sitting on, anything that a Samaritan person has touched is unclean, and a Jewish man would have to undergo purification to enter into ritual practice again, to enter into the temple, to be seen in polite company, you know. And here's this Jew all by himself in Samaria. He's in hostile territory. He's at her well. She's not at his well. He's at her well, and he's just sitting there. And he says, "Hey, could you get me a drink of water?" I wonder if she thinks back to their common stories, their common religious heritage, and she remembers the story of Abraham's servant at the well, right? I remember that story because it's about Rebecca. I like that story. And Abraham's servant is looking for a suitable wife for Abraham's son, Isaac. And so he goes up to this woman, Rebecca, and he says, "Could you draw me a drink of water?" And the way he knows that she's a righteous and a kind and a compassionate woman is that she says yes, and she provides him and his camels with water. I wonder if she thinks back to that and kind of has a little chuckle, like, this man's got no idea what he's getting himself into. Does he have any? Is he, like, hitting on me? Is he playing matchmaker here? What's going on? Is he trying to see if I'm a good person? I've had 5 husbands. He's got no idea. I wonder if she has a little laugh at the dichotomy there, you know, that one story about finding this righteous and wonderful and lovely woman, in my unbiased opinion, and this other story, her story, about brokenness and being flawed and thirsty and empty, and he thinks that she's going to draw him some water. I imagine that she thinks he's kind of a little slow, like maybe he hasn't noticed that he's in Samaria, or that she's Samaritan and he's Jewish, like maybe he's forgotten. So she takes it upon herself to remind him and kind of correct his social faux pas here. And she says, "Psst, you're Jewish. I'm Samaritan. Why are you asking me for water? You can't drink it anyway." His answer convinces her that she's right. He's definitely slow, or maybe a little bit crazy. He says, "Actually, if you knew who you were talking to, you'd ask me for water." And she's going, okay, this guy's delusional. She's not, by the way, the first or the last person to think this about this particular Jew. But she says, okay, this guy's a little bit wacky. I'll play along. All right, smarty pants, how are you going to get that water? You don't have anything to draw the water with. You don't have so much as a little dipper, let alone a bucket or anything to get down into the well. You just asked me for water. How are you going to get down the water? You think you're better than Jacob? Silly man. And then he kind of brings her up short. And he says, well, the water that I have is living water. That means not just like living water, but flowing water, moving water. Not stagnant water sitting at the bottom of the well. Flowing water. Living water. Like a bubbling brook that can bring nutrients and life to an area, like that fresh, crisp mountain spring water that, you know, we all love so much. That's what he's got. He's got living water. And this magic water, if you drink this magic water, you'll never be thirsty again. And this brings her up short a little bit. Because on the one hand, I imagine she still thinks he's a little bit crazy. Most people think he's a little bit crazy. But on the other hand, she really wants what he's talking about. And notice that what she says is, how do I get this water so I don't have to come here anymore to this well? It's another thing that makes me think that maybe she's trying to avoid people and come into the well at noon. How do I get this water so that I won't be thirsty anymore? How do I get this water so that I can have this eternal life thing you're talking about? How do I get this water so that I don't have to come here and keep refilling this same empty pitcher time after time after time? And now it's her that's kind of seeing things from the wrong perspective, seeing things in a limited way. She thought that he was missing the picture, but now it's her that's missing the picture, because in that moment of kind of shock and that jarring moment of him offering her something that she really does want, she slips, and that kind of sarcasm that I imagine she has, that cynicism that I imagine that she has, having built that up to protect herself, kind of slips away, and she says, no, I want that. I want that water. And she takes him very literally, when, of course, he's not talking about a spring that he knows about, you know, 3 minutes hike that way. He's talking about something else. And then he does something phenomenal. He has a whole conversation with her. First, he calls her out. You know, he's not done breaking through that veneer of cynicism. He says, oh, go get your husband. Yeah, that's right. I know about your husband. And kind of knocks her back a peg a little bit. And she goes, ooh. But then he has a whole conversation about her, with her, about theology. about worship, about the differences between Samaritans and Jews, about how God works and how we worship God and who God is and that God is spirit and truth. He treats her like she matters. He speaks to her head and her heart. He cares about how she feels and how she thinks. And he treats her like a person. Dare I say, like an equal. And then he reveals to her something he hasn't told his disciples yet. She says, you know, I know we've got our religious differences, but we too believe that there's a Messiah that's coming and that he's going to help us with this worshiping God thing. And Jesus says, he's here. I'm him. And he reveals that to her. And then she leaves her pitcher and returns to her village. Let's go back just a second. She's here at the well, thirsty, tired, parched, wrung dry, an outcast, feeling trapped, feeling locked in, and she's just here to fill her water pitcher and go home and get it over with. She's come for this one need, just to fill this pitcher. And she leaves the pitcher behind. And she who was avoiding human contact goes running back to her village and seeks people out. She who didn't want to hear what people were saying about her behind her back goes running back and tells people, I've met the Messiah. She who was tired and thirsty and hot and wrung out goes back so overjoyed, so overflowing with blessing and with hope that she forgets her water pitcher that she came there to fill because she herself has been filled. She leaves her clay vessel behind because she has become a living water vessel. And I mean that in two ways. She's become a living vessel. She herself is alive and is a vessel. And she's become a vessel for living water, which, as Jesus has just told her, is not H2O. It is spirit and truth. It is the hope and the belief in God. It is the true worship. It is the good news of the Messiah. And she is overflowing with it. As individuals on our Lenten journeys, on our spiritual journeys, I think there are many times we can identify with this woman who comes to the well, this unnamed woman. We know the name of the town, we know the name of the well, we don't know her name. But this unknown woman who comes to the well, I think there are many times we can identify with that. We're tired. We're thirsty. We're running on empty. We're just worn out. We feel trapped and locked into routine and the old ways of being and our expectations and other people's expectations, burdened down by our past and the mistakes we've made and the things that have gone wrong in our lives. And we're just tired. And we're going through the motions to just fill up the water bottle so we can go about our business. Because we just don't have any more left in us. You know? And we need to get filled up again. We need to come to a well that doesn't run dry. We need to find the living water and get filled up again. And this story reminds us where to seek that and who to seek it from and what it is, that the pitcher that we came to fill is not what we're looking for. Whatever that surface level need was, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for the living water. We're looking for spirit and truth. But this story reminds me of something else, especially because in our church the past couple of years, we're taking Lent as a time to also be intentionally opening and welcoming in our space and to invite people in as we prepare for Hospitality Sunday and we prepare for Palm Sunday and Easter, to be aware that we are a welcoming body. We are a community that is open to others. And this story to me struck me this week as a story about who the church is and who the church is supposed to be. Because you see, the church is the well. It's that place, a gathering place, right, where people come. And people come to this well, some of them just villagers that come all the time, same time, talk together and share together and have a wonderful time together. But that's only one use of the well. Just as coming to church and fellowshipping and having a great time, that's good. But that's just the surface level of what church is about. This is a well where people come carrying vessels, their very selves, that are broken and dried out and wrung out and tired and outcast and don't even know why they're here and really wish they could just be ignored, please, and leave me alone because I don't want to interact with anybody. I'm tired. Or I've been hurt before, but I'm dragging my feet and I'm coming anyway because I have a need. My water bottle is empty. My pitcher has run dry. I've run dry. And I've just got this surface need to fill. And the question is, are we the church, a local church, St. Paul's? Are we the church, a global church, all of the entire Christian movement throughout history? Are we the church a place of transformation? Are we the church a place where people who are lost and dry and wrung out, where people who are outcast and feeling ashamed and burdened, a place where people who are so empty can come thinking they're just going to fill a water pitcher and can leave overflowing with living water, can leave bubbling up all of the joy and the hope that they didn't even know the world could contain? Are we a place where people come broken and lonely and afraid and leave and go out to tell people, I've had an encounter. I met the Messiah. I have hope and joy for the world. I want to worship God in spirit and in truth. That's who I think the church is supposed to be. And we don't hit the nail on the head every time. We don't get it right all the time. Throughout history and throughout our own personal histories, we don't always get it right. Some people just come to the well and fill their jug and go away. Some people go, I don't want to go to that well anymore. Some people get hurt by the whispers and the sneers of others at the well throughout history. But sometimes, I hope the majority of the time, I hope more and more frequently, the more and more we work at it, we, the church, the whole church, are the place where people are filled. Not on the level they thought they needed, not with water that runs dry again and they have to come back next week just to fill it to get through another few days. We are the place where people are filled with that which can transform them. We are the place where people can meet God, can encounter Christ. We are the place where people are filled in themselves so that they return to their homes and they return to their lives overflowing with living water and come back again and again and again, not to meet a surface need, but to connect again with one another, to reach again into that deeper well that is worshiping God together in spirit, in truth. That is the very essence of what it means to be filled to overflowing, to be a wellspring of blessing and of joy for others. That's who I hope we can be. That's who I pray we can be. Amen.